Hi everyone. Oh, I hope you all feel welcome. So as Emiko just said, my name is Ramona Lisa Ortiz Smith. My pronoun is she plus anything that goes with that. I am currently residing on unceded Coast Miwok land in a small town called Fairfax in California, about 10 minutes away, really 7 minutes if you push the speed limit when you're driving from Spirit Rock. I have to allow for time so that I don't speed. What else do I want to say? Just I'm excited to be here, excited and nervous. And I hope that, we have a good time and that, there's some benefit here. And basically I want to share with, how are y'all? Just give me a little nod or shake or something, you know, some emojis, whatever, just to say, hey, thanks for showing up if you're on this coast in this time zone so early. It's early for me, but I'm awake. I've had my coffee and my breakfast. Most of my coffee and most of my breakfast, actually, not all of it. So, you know what? I need to get my timer set because I need to keep track of myself because I am verbose, so to speak. All right. Okay. So, basically, the theme today and title of my Dharma sharing is Soldier of Love, crediting Sade, Weapons of Mass Construction, Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upekkha, translated as loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. I'll get into a little more about that. And my intention is to share the Dharma, my Dharma experience and knowledge from a place of love and in a way that I hope benefits all beings, literally, benefits you in some way. And it's an effort, the effort today or the purpose really of sharing this Dharma sharing in this way is to practice cultivating and generating love, compassion, and joy and equanimity for ourselves and others and all beings. And the planet. You know, there's a way that we can still cultivate these qualities even amidst all that's going on in the world that is not so pleasant, that is harmful, that is painful, that is suffering that the Buddha says we have to live with. So trigger alert, already in my title, Weapons of Mass Construction, though, construction. I want to let you know that I will be using the word soldier. I may mention war, you know, talking about fighting, weapons, military. We're going to hear some music. There'll be rhythms and beats that could be, they remind me of military sounds. And so knowing that there are people here, perhaps people in your family, and we know people around the world that are actually soldiers fighting wars. I wanted to acknowledge that. And yeah, I want to respectfully take a moment to honor those that are fighting, those that have fought, those who have lost their lives, their minds, their limbs, and those that have come home with other illnesses such as PTSD. And those that are homeless and hungry without care after serving in the armed forces all over the world. And, you know, those that are actively serving now. And I know my grandfather, Francisco Vasquez Ortiz, fought in the war, a war. You know, and I have a nephew who is alive still, doing well, Guadalupe Smith, he fought in the war. And my sister, Denise Hudson, who's passed away, was enrolled in the Army, but she's one who came home without proof, but she lost her mind. So let's just take a moment to understand the heaviness associated with soldiers, weapons, loss of life, etc. So again, this offering is from a place of love. The heart practices. We're going to start with a sound meditation. We're going to listen to a song, first time we hear it, without the lyrics. If you do need support and need to see the lyrics now, for accessibility reasons, please chat Emiko. We will listen to the song again later at the end with the lyrics shown for us all to reflect on. But this time I invite you to listen. So, whatever posture is comfortable for you, setting my little timer, people. If you hear it going off, I need this for myself. Getting into a comfortable posture, sitting, standing, lying down, or anything in between that's comfortable for your body at this time. Not the posture you want to be in, not the posture you think you should be in, and maybe not even the posture you got into when you first came into the room today. Check in with your body, your physical form, and see if it's comfortable. If you're in a position that's upright, not upright and stiff, but upright in heart and mind and spirit, a position that allows you to open your heart center right here, to relax into the earth, to feel the firmness of the foundation that you are resting on, and make a connection. And if you're comfortable, you can close your eyes if the eyelids haven't already dropped. Or you can keep a low gaze if it's uncomfortable for you to have your eyes closed, or if it's just that's the way you practice. I started my practice with open eye meditation for years. No, there's no hierarchy. There are just different ways of processing and receiving information. And so I invite you to check in with your bodily form, bringing attention to your head, the skull, checking in to see if there's tension or anywhere that you can relax as you bring mindfulness to each area of this bodily form. So the skull resting on the neck, the shoulders, the upper arms, the elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, and fingers, if you have them. Back up to the chest, upper back, middle belly, middle back, low belly, lower back, pelvis, sits bones and coccyx bones, hips, buttocks, thighs, knees, lower legs, ankles, feet, toes, whatever bodily parts are accessible to you. Are they relaxed? Are they resting on the earth surface? Earth on earth. Now checking in with your breathing sensation. How do you know you're breathing? Do you feel it in your nose, your mouth, your throat, your chest, your belly? Or perhaps your breathing is so subtle you don't notice it. Maybe there's congestion, dryness, tightness. Maybe you're breathing in fresh air or some aroma that's pleasant or unpleasant. Once you have touched in with your breath, Breathe in as fully as possible, receiving the nourishment from the earth's atmosphere. And exhale, letting go of all unnecessary tension and stuff. Do that a couple of times on your own. And then allow your breath to resume a natural rhythm. And check in with your sense doors, the eyes. If they're open, maybe you see an object or colors. If they're closed, you may see light patterns behind the closed eyes. Your nose receives information as well as breathing. Again, aroma. Your mouth, maybe there's a taste. Consciousness, you know you're here. And now, the ears, sounds. Listen. Absorb, reflect to the lyrics of Sade's Soldier of Love. Allowing the words to settle. Noticing sensations in the body, in the ears. Perhaps you were moving as I was. Perhaps you were still. Maybe emotions are arising, thoughts, sensations. Pleasant or unpleasant experience. Just pay attention to what's happening in your consciousness at this time and settle a little more into embodied stillness and empowered silence for a couple of more moments. I'll ring the bell 3 times in a few moments. Yes, so allowing yourself to return to the Zoom room. And, you know, if you need to wiggle or stretch, stand or shift or turn, whatever it is, adjust your posture. I'll be sharing verbally for the next little bit here. And the first thing I want to share is that I am like so in my element right now with music. I don't know about you, but I couldn't sit still. So I was swaying and rocking and bobbing and nodding and still in my seat, but it's like, I just music, I just love it. And I didn't want to offer any guidance on it. It's like, listen, wondering, what did you experience? Did you feel like you should be moving or not moving? Can I move? Should I move? I don't want to move. Oh, I don't like that song. Oh, I love that song. Or why are we doing this? What was happening in your mind? It's all okay. Whatever it was is okay. But just noticing. Noticing when we have freedom and choice and we don't make it. Noticing that if your body wanted to move and you didn't, or if you wanted to cry or laugh or you were angry and you try to stop it. Why? We have to live fully into our hearts, people. And the Dharma supports us in doing that in a way that we hopefully cause less harm to ourselves and other beings. Because it can be harming to silence and stop and stilt ourselves. And I know for me as a person of color, music is so important. I thought about taking the vows of, I took them for a little bit, Upasaka vows, where you kind of follow the eight precepts, and part of it is like not no music, no dancing, no this and that. I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do when I hear Snoop Dogg? I'm not gonna be going, but that's a big question for me. Like, how can how I have to live? Dancing was my first embodiment practice. Music and dancing, that's what I grew up with. That's what brings me good feelings, bad feelings, sad feelings, happy feelings. It soothes me in addition to meditation. So I'm in my element. I forgot to light my candle and set the mood because I was so excited about Sade. So I'm gonna do that right quick. Setting some mood for all of us here. Also like to clear the air and have a little bit of incense. For me, it's really a pleasure because I know a lot of places to be more inclusive are fragrance free, and I honor and understand that. So I really appreciate when I practice at home and I can light my incense. And then, of course, some sage to clear the air, some medicine. This, is really helpful. But the music does the same thing for me. It clears the air, sets the mood, sets the tone. So, with that said, back to today's theme, Soldier of Love. Weapons of mass construction, metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. So, what is a soldier? I looked it up. I like to look up words. Etymology is important to me, and especially in the Dharma, it's been, it's convert Western Buddhist translated Dharma, mostly translated by white men who went over to Southeast Asia and brought it back. Thankfully, the gift has impacted my life tremendously, but now I feel a responsibility to, do what the Buddha actually intended, adapt it to my culture. My heritages, my experiences. So words, are part of that. But right now, so for a soldier is a person who serves in the army according to Google. Or someone that carries on doggedly, someone that perseveres. And that's how I feel about myself and being a soldier of love. When I first heard that song, I was like, yes, I'm a soldier. I'm a soldier. I'm a soldier of love. I keep trying. I'm persevering. I keep trying. I keep picking up and going out into that battlefield of life. And I carry on sometimes doggedly, some doggedly. It's rough out there. And exhausting to persevere. But there are qualities also that soldiers have. I wanted to look it up because it's like you're talking about your soldier of love. What that mean? What that mean? What does that mean? I know what it means for myself, but I wanted to be able to articulate it to you all in some way, right? That's part of my conditioning, validating with words and looking up and referencing and citing and all of that. I've got that part too. So with that said, and I enjoy it. I enjoy, intellectual, critical thought, challenge, etc. In the way I've been conditioned. So, qualities of a soldier: honesty, courage, self-control, decency, and conviction of purpose. Those are some of the ones that were also listed on Google, you know, Wikipedia or whatever it is that brings up the definitions. Discipline, strong focus, integrity, loyalty, selflessness, or selfless commitment, and again, courage. Courage came up in two searches. Courage, courage, the heart. It takes heart to be a soldier. And I would say, you know, to protect other people's lives, risking your own out there in the armed forces like they do, or the fire department, or the police, you know, as we won't even go there because it's not all good. I know that. But I'm just saying they're still risking their lives, the good ones and the bad ones. And so what do I have? Yeah, I have honesty. I'm an honest person. Not that I haven't lied or been dishonest in my life, but I lean more towards honesty because I have a guilty conscience. That guilt keeps me honest, to be honest. You know, and it causes harm when you find yourself doing things in a dishonest way. At least when I find myself doing things in a dishonest way, I carry a load in my heart. So it's liberating to be honest. And to have courage. I mean, as a person of color, again, I've got to have courage just to live every day, to step outside and just know that I'm being looked at in a certain way. Or there's that possibility that people already have assumptions about me because people identify me as Black. I am Black. I identify myself, you know, as African-American, Latina, Puerto Rican. You know, then I call in my Caddo, you know, indigenous tribes, and my El Taino indigenous tribes as well, mixed race. But in America, I'm Black. And there's a lot that comes with that. And I have locks. And I, you know, I used to look young, so it was just double whammy. And sometimes, because of the way I look, I grew up, people always ask me, are you a girl or a boy? Are you a girl or a boy? And I'd be like, I'm a girl. What's wrong with you? You know, but, you know, now I realize that there's so many biases that we grow up with. You know, people still sometimes think I'm male and Black with a hoodie and my locks. So my life is at risk. So it takes courage to walk in this world. Self-control. We know as people of color, you got to have self-control because people will say something to you and you're just, you don't know, got to breathe. And these practices help with all of that. Decency, conviction of purpose. And I am the decency, the Dharma and these heart practices help me to stay in, you know, decency is kind of a that word is giving me some, I don't know, it's bothering me right now. I don't really like it because it has judgment in it. But the fact is that, you know, there's a quality that soldiers have. And me as a soldier of love, I have the quality of believing that we all should live a decent life. We should have the things we need and be cared for in a decent fashion. Not so much that we should be pure or whatever that all means. And discipline. You know, we need discipline. We have to do things that we don't have to, but if we do things in, you know, like our practice, our meditation practice or our Dharma practice, whatever that is for us, if we commit to it and are, you know, do it whether we want to do it or like it or not, as long as we're not causing harm to ourselves and others, like having a regular sitting or maybe not sitting, stillness practice, having a regular stillness practice can benefit our lives, even if that stillness practice is distracted, short, your mind won't stop, whatever it is, the discipline of doing it is really what strengthens your ability to stick with it and to receive the benefits from it. The quality of that practice is not, you know, it all is practice. You know, I might sit down and go, oh, my mind was busy, I had a terrible meditation. No, my mind was busy. I noticed my mind was busy. You know, that's mindfulness too. And a strong focus. A strong focus, like we were just trying to focus on the sound meditation. Integrity, loyalty, selfless commitment, and courage. And I'm committed to love. Real love, true love. In Christian tradition, practitioners are known as soldiers of God. And they're in God's army. And I like to say, they say soldiers are called to counter evil with the overwhelming, overcoming good that flows from a heart in love with God. And I changed that with the words because I grew up with a Christian background, but I now am a dedicated practitioner of the Dharma, of the Buddhist tradition. And I changed that to say, so that it fits my heart and I can live by it and practice with it authentically, by saying soldiers are called in the Dharma, in my Dharma practice, I, as a soldier, I am called to counter dukkha, suffering, with the overwhelming. So I'm countering dukkha with the overwhelming, overcoming good that flows from a heart in love with the Dharma, in love with life. Dharma simply means seeing things as they are, life as it is. And an army is Sangha, community, us here together. We are a community. And if we were all soldiers of love, we would be an army, armed with love, armed with boundless hearts to live this life, as hard as it is, with the best intentions, from a place that causes the least harm for ourselves and others. And we know that Sangha in Buddhist terms means community. Or if you didn't know that, you know it now. And in many cultures, especially indigenous cultures, community is the heart of life. We function on community. And the Buddha, as an indigenous person of Southeast Asia, knew that. And when he constructed the system of the Buddhist monastery and such, the community was at the heart of it. And he depended on the community. The monastics depend on the community to survive. The monastics give the teachings and the Dharma, and the community gives the sustenance, the food, the shelter, the money, the medicine. So, you know, these are universal teachings. So let me break down some of these lyrics for you, why I was so moved or why I continue to be moved by Sade's song. This song has been around for years, you know. Ooh, and let me get me a Kleenex or something. Well, I have my scarf, so I can do my eyes. But I have lost the use of my heart. Sade says, I can't sing, but I will sing. I lost the use of my heart, but I'm still alive. I was like, yes, because I've lost the use of my heart. I've shut down to love in all its forms. I had the fear of giving love. I had deep grief, depression, and I'm a hardcore survivor. And I put on that armor. I put on the real armor to protect my heart. And I shut it down. And I was afraid to give love or receive love. So, you know, I literally had a shield. You know, I'm saying literally, but I felt it, an energetic shield around this heart area, my fourth chakra here. It was protected. I still loved my daughter, loved my family, loved my friends, loved this, loved that, but it was limited. No one was going to cross that threshold, and I wasn't going to, you know, offer too much because I didn't want to be hurt. In fact, one time I went to a healer for my back, a healer I had never known. And I went because I was trying all these things for the pain in my back. And he said to me, he said, "Woo." He said, "Your heart area, your chest is like steel." And I was just like, oh my God. He sensed it. It was a trip. I was there for my back, not for somebody to tell me about my heart. I didn't go back to him because I wasn't ready to deal with that, you know. But the practice of the Dharma, particularly the four Brahmaviharas, have helped me to survive. They've helped me to open up this area to slowly but surely, I don't know how it dissolve maybe this hard thing around my, not even before you get to the heart, just dissolve around just the metal around the chest area had to get dissolved before I could even go in deep and touch the heart. The physical heart and the emotional, spiritual heart, heart mind. And it was these four Brahma Viharas that began to help me do that, that were the medicine that taught me to have the courage to open the heart, tenderize the heart, so that I could love, give love, feel love, and live in love as best I could. And I'm talking about, benevolence, not an attached love, not a romantic love, but a true love, unconditional love towards myself first. And then other beings, and then the world. And it's a constant practice. It's a constant battle, this life of mine. And all that I've been through, I'm still alive. I still have the will to survive, but it's the Dharma that has given me that. I truly believe it. And the Buddha doesn't want us to believe. The Buddha says, go see for yourself. This is what I found out in my stillness practice, in my deep reflection, in my journey on the spiritual path. And if you do these things or practice these things or look internally and apply them and reflect on them and contemplate them, you can have this life. And if you don't, you can have this life. And there's no judgment. That's just the way it is. So metta, loving kindness, karuna, mudita, upekkha, became my weapons of mass construction because I had to reconstruct my heart. Reconstruct my heart by getting back in touch with these qualities that are already innately a part of who I am and already a part of who you are. But I needed to not be afraid to develop them. And they're needed, these weapons of mass construction are needed in this world today, are needed in the Wild Wild West, as Sade says. And the Wild Wild West is this life, is my life. It's this world, it's my personal struggles, it's the mass shootings, it's the grief, it's the war, it's the sexism, it's the genderism, it's the, or, I don't even know if that's the right word, but it's the homophobia. It's all of that, the economic and social inequalities, all of that, that dukkha that the Buddha tells us about is the Wild Wild West. It's constantly happening. I don't need to name it. You all can name it. I'm afraid to name it. Actually, last night I said I'm not going to name anything because I'm going to forget something and I'm going to say something wrong. Because it's happening so fast, in my opinion, and so much. But you know what I'm talking about, the Wild Wild West. Think for a moment. What's in your Wild Wild West right now? What in the Wild Wild West of your life is impacting you in a negative way? Causing harm, causing worry, causing anxiety, causing illness, causing death, causing loss of freedom and choice, causing fear. That's the Wild Wild West, people. And there are times when it gets like that, when it gets hard, when it gets tough, where I turn on the news trying to watch a basketball game, and there's another mass shooting, and I'm like, what? And it takes me to, again, in Sade's words, to the borderline of my faith, the edge. What's on the other side of that is not good. It takes me to the borderline of my faith and the hinterland of my devotion to my life, to these practices, to the universe, to this world. I go there, I go, oh, do these practices really work? What am I doing sitting here meditating on love? And the world is on fire. The world is on fire. But when I'm there, when I'm at the hinterland of my devotion, the hinterland, uncharted areas, it says on Google, beyond a coastal district or a river's bank, an area lying beyond what is visible or known. And so I'm leaning more towards an area lying beyond what's visible or known, because when I'm at the hinterland of my devotion or the borderline of my faith, I don't know what I'm going to do. I go to some deep places. I've gone to places that I've never been spiritually and emotionally. Way out deep under places I never knew I could go, or more realistically feel or experience or see. And then ultimately survive, because I'm still here. I'm still alive. Like Sade says, I am still alive. And faith is having a trust or confidence in someone or something. You know, and my faith, it gets tested. My faith in the Dharma, my faith again in life itself. But I go like this to myself. I go, okay, well, if all that negative energy impacts me, if all that hatred, delusion, greed, destruction, worry, fear, anxiety, if that impacts my body and I get my anxiety or go into a depression or freak out in some way or become so fearful and nervous because of what's happening in the world, whether it's in my life directly or indirectly, we're all connected, so it impacts you in some way. If that's real, then so is the power of love. So is kindness. So is benevolence. So is not causing harm. So is living honesty and honestly and decently. So is just caring. If that positive energy, some joy, a little contentment, some happiness, compassion, it can impact us in the same way. So we cultivate that in our hearts, in our lives. We can impact the world. And it's hard sometimes when you know that, when you're there. And sometimes it gets very intense. And like Sade says, she's in the front line of this battle of mine. And I say that I'm in the front line of this battle of mine, but I'm still alive. I'm a soldier of love. Every day of my life. I'll play it again later because I'm screwing it up. I know it, but I feel it in my heart. I'm a soldier of love. You know, I am. I've got to go there. And so what are the Brahmaviharas? What are they? They are, again, these weapons of mass construction, or have been in my life, because it was a mess. Mass construction. What have we heard for the last however many years? Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Well, we've also got weapons of mass construction. Whatever those are for you, as long as they don't cause harm, dust them off, people. Dust them off. Because it's rough out there. It's Wild Wild West. And if you're in the East, I lived on the East too. So, you know, same thing. It's just a figure of speech to say it's wild out there. And so the Brahmaviharas have helped me to reconstruct my heart. I keep saying, I still wear this armor now instead of the other armor. My heart is open. Not that I don't get scared, not that I don't get hurt, but I have found that with an open heart, actually feeling the pain and having these teachings to work with it and other supports is beneficial and has helped me to survive and to live. Real talk. Real talk. So the Brahmaviharas represent true love in action to me. You know, they serve as protection, they serve as medicine, and they help me to stay alive. And even though I'm exhausted, I'm still trying my hardest and doing my best to stay alive, because I get knocked off my rocker. So here, I was going to read these words first of Sade. I'm a soldier of love. Every day and every night, I'm a soldier of love. all the days of my life. I've been torn up inside. I've been left behind. Tall I ride. I have the will to survive in the wild, wild west. Trying my hardest, doing my best to stay alive. And then she says, love, I still believe love will come and turn it all around. And I am just right there with her. Right there with her. And so these four Brahmaviharas, here they are and how we can incorporate them into our lives. So they're really qualities of heart known as the divine abodes. And the first one again is metta in Pali, most commonly translated as loving kindness. But there are other words, because I know for me, going straight to love from like shutdown didn't really work. As a matter of fact, sometimes other things came up. Guilt, how can I love myself and the world is falling apart and all this stuff. But so you can choose other words or use other words such as benevolence, unconditional love. This is the kind of love that you can have regardless of the conditions of the world or your life. You can still have a sense of love in your heart, a sense of well-being, a sense of ease. Kind-heartedness or gentle care, or just simple concern for others and yourself. That's a heart with metta. That's a metta practice. That's a quality that you already have innately in you that you may need to cultivate a little bit more. And it's a different type of love. It's not an attached love. It's not like, well, I'll love you if you marry me, or, you know, I'll love you if you do that, or, you know, whatever. It's not attachment. Or the kind of love I have for my daughter. I'm attached to my daughter. I mean, I love her unconditionally as well, but it's a complicated relationship, right? Because I'm her mother. So I'm like, I still feel like sometimes she'll be 27 next week. I still feel like the umbilical cord is attached sometimes. And I have literally like had to go like cut it, you know, so that's attached love. It's not that kind of love either. Even though the Buddha uses that as a way of showing us the level of love that we should have for all beings. And it's a tall order. He says, even as a mother protects with her life, her only child, so with a boundless heart, should we cherish all living beings. I said, whoa. You know, and what does the Buddha know about a child and being a mother? You know, but he had a wife. He ghosted her. He had a wife. But that's a whole nother story. And he had a son. You know, so I'm like, okay, maybe there's a clue. But basically, he's just saying we should love all beings in such this high, respectful, unconditional way. And let them be free. And I have a difficult time with that with my daughter. So with other people, it's like, whoa. Okay, my timer. So anyway, it's not conditional love. It's a love for all beings. I was teaching a class the other night and one of my participants said, you know, all beings, even those that I don't really like, care for. Mm-hmm. But it takes a while to get there. You're not going to just jump there. I mean, for me, sometimes if there's a difficult person, situation, or relationship that I can't say, I love, may you be filled with love, and I offer you my love and kindness. I just say, I include them in all beings. I know that when I say all beings, they're included, and it gives me some space and distance so I'm not causing myself any harm and extending myself to a place that doesn't feel authentic. Because ultimately, I wish we could all be safe and loved. Every single one of us, because maybe we wouldn't have all this destruction on the planet. And then there's karuna, care for others' suffering. Karuna translates as compassion. Oftentimes you might hear suffer with, but that causes more suffering, I've heard some of my teachers say. So I like to translate it as caring for the suffering of others, or, you know, as opposed to suffering with them. Can I hold their suffering? Can I understand their suffering? Can I just care? Even if there's nothing I can do. You know, it's like the general care and well-being of ourselves and other people. Having compassion. And it's not pity. It's not like, oh, I feel so bad for them. You know, because that puts us on different levels. It's, no, We all deserve that same level of care, I believe. Just general care for the well-being of others. General care. Everyone should have housing and medicine, I feel, and food and shelter at a certain level. General care. No matter what. And it's not cruelty. Cruelty is the opposite of compassion. And then there's mudita, which is translated as appreciative joy, and it means that, you know, it's like a joy you have for others. It's like being happy for other people. Or touching into the simple joys of life, I like to say. For example, when my little niece, you know, when I show up and she goes, "Hi, Nana." And I get so excited and I'm just filled with joy. You know, I'm really excited because she don't always go, "Hi, Nana." Sometimes she's like, "Eh," you know. So when she goes, "Hi, Nana," I'm like, "Oh my gosh." You know, I'm filled up. I'm filled up. Or it's a simple joy of looking outside after I've seen something on the news and, you know, the hawk is flying around. And I'm just like, ah, beauty, juxtaposed to the destruction. So we have to cultivate that too. And to be happy that, you know, like one of my best friends just got married. I was sincerely happy that she was happy and that she was getting married. As opposed to maybe in my 20s, someone was getting married. I was like, "Well, I want to get married." You know? That's not appreciative joy. Wanting what the other person wants. That's more jealousy, envy side. So the joy where you can be happy in other people's happiness. And guess what? You can also be happy for yourself when you're happy. You can be happy that you're happy, people. Even with all this dukkha, suffering. Soak it in. All of it's temporary. So if you have a moment of happiness, you know, like I'm happy when I hear this music for a moment. And who knows what the world's going to bring after this class this morning, this gathering. But I was happy to be here sharing the Dharma, listening to Sade, doing what I love. I'm happy, content. So it's a sense of contentment because sometimes joy and happy is huge. You know, it's like to me, there's a spectrum. You know, you can be joyous. There's that, you know, that's more like exuberance. But this is like an ease and a sense of contentment, regardless of what's happening in the world. There's an appreciation. I just say simple joy, opening to the simple joys in your life. And allowing them to be there. Allowing yourself to taste it, to feel it, to appreciate it, because we're bombarded with the other stuff. So, you know, it's hard, I feel sometimes, to allow that joy to rise, you know, and not to negate the other stuff because they're both happening. The Dharma teaches us that there's just this unsatisfactoriness to life. That's just the way it is. Dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Suffering. And the joy and the pleasantness exist at the same time, too, the peace. So, regardless of the conditions of our lives, we can have happiness and love in our hearts, in the way we live, in the way we navigate. And that takes us to the final one, which is upekkha, equanimity, equipoise. It's a sense of balance, a sense of ease. With what is. That's huge because no, that's the one that keeps us centered. That's the one that I see is like, okay, when I take a breath, when I pause and take a breath, even if it's after I've exploded, but when I pause and take a breath, I can go, okay, so this is the truth. This is what's happening. This is the situation. And now, how can I respond from a place of wisdom and compassion? That's equanimity. How can I be with what is just as it is? How can I see the truth? This is how it is right now. And that's for, again, both the, you know, the beneficial things in life and the things that are not so beneficial. This is how it is right now. It's seeing the truth without delusion. And the difference, the thing with equanimity to watch out for is the is indifference. You know, it's not indifference. We don't want to numb out. You still want to feel. You still want to feel. 'Cause I know that's why I shut down. Didn't want to feel anymore. I felt like if I let anything in, I just would not live. I would not survive. You know, but equanimity gives us the strength when we begin to understand and contemplate that quality of life. It gives us the strength to be with what is, with wisdom and compassion. And to me, it's easier to live with least resistance. You know? So the heart qualities, again, are innate, and all we need to do is cultivate these qualities that are within us. Cultivate them just like we cultivate maybe a garden. You know, like my tomatoes out there, they need some water. They need some cultivation. And sometimes that's my mudita, sometimes it's my metta, sometimes it's my karuna, and sometimes it's my equanimity. It's just wilting away. Sometimes it dries up completely, but the seeds are still there. The essence is still there, and all I need to do is tend to it. And that's what these heart qualities do. So metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha as weapons of mass construction really, really have helped me to live in a way where I can touch into my heart, still have all the same feelings and, you know, fears and sadness and grief and anxiety and depression and anger and lose my patience. But I think I just come back. I come back with a little more, with a lot more ease, I'll say. You know, and I'm not walking around going, oh, metta, da, 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 you know, but that's part of the discipline of the practice. When you practice and understand and contemplate and reflect and apply these to your lives in a real way, using words and experiences that are really happening to you, that's where the cultivation happens, and you begin to do these things in a way that you feel your life is different. And again, the Buddha says, go see for yourself, try it on. Don't believe it. It's not something we believe in. It's something we practice. It's something we actively do. And I often say, is this enough? The world's on fire. Is this enough? Am I doing enough? Sitting here, oh, I, what do you do? Oh, I teach meditation and Dharma. The world's on fire. But again, I go back to yes. And if all that stuff is on fire because of all the angry, the greed, the hatred, delusion, if that is true, if that energy again can impact me, then this certainly has to. It's a law of nature. Cultivating a kind heart and sharing my experience with others, like share, it's like I found this medicine. I'm not trying to recruit any Buddhists. Let me be clear. But I found this medicine that has supported me in my life. And if you can find any benefit from it, whatever you call it, whatever you do, I invite you to do so. Whatever it is, whatever your weapons of mass construction are. We are going to do another sound meditation, but I'm going to invite you to experience it differently. We're going to show the lyrics, going to play the music. You can stand, you can move, you can dance, you can sing, but we got to stay on mute because of the way Zoom is. And we could, well, I like it a little louder, so. We will, I'll just let you know, we're going to hear the song. We're going to do what we do. Then I'll settle us into a little bit of empowered silence and embodied stillness. And then I'll offer some ways to work with these four Brahma Viharas. And we'll end with the empowered silent meditation. Dedication of Marin, I'll ring the bell and we'll be done. So this is the beginning of the end of our session together. All right. Whew. I don't know. I couldn't see y'all. I don't know if I was dancing by myself or not. And then I couldn't find my little bell striker. I had a good time. I hope you did. Yeah, so coming back into embodied stillness. Again, assuming a posture that is comfortable for you if you want to keep standing. If you were able to stand or lying down or sitting or anything in between. This whole body, this fathom-long body, the Buddha says, has everything we need to wake up. It's not external. It's internal. Yeah. So yeah, I'm inspired. I'm a soldier of love. I hope you're inspired as well. So noticing again the weight of the body. Any sensations, the pace of the breath. If you were moving, noticing the breathing now. My mouth is open, not just to talk, but also to breathe, because I should dance more often for cardiovascular strength. So where do you feel the breath? What's going on in your mind and your heart? What sensations are you feeling and noticing? Emotions, thoughts, memories, plans. Watching the mind do what it does. It thinks, it plans. It leans back into the past and leans forward into the future. Our meditation practice supports us in being here now in the present moment. And not that it's wrong to be in the past. We can learn from it. And not that it's wrong to lean into the future. We have to plan for it in some ways. But it's noticing when we get lost in the past, lost in plans and attached to the plans of the future. That's what can bring us more suffering. There's enough suffering in the present moment, along with the joys of life. So be here now. Learn from the past. I like to say I have plans so that I don't get completely lost, but I am loose with them. So remembering the four Brahmaviharas as weapons of mass construction, cultivating kindness, tender care, unconditional love is metta. Loving kindness. And then we can cultivate and offer care for others suffering or in pain, emotional or physically, for ourselves and others. That's karuna, compassion. And we can open to and acknowledge the simple joys of life, pleasantness, ease, and peace of well-being, basic happiness. Spontaneous joy or gladness, and I'll add contentment. That's mudita. And we can cultivate groundedness and allow a steady sense of balance, ease, and wisdom. Steadiness with an open heart. We can cultivate and practice a sense of non-judgmental awareness and acceptance. That's upekkha. Equanimity. And these four weapons of mass construction that support us in soldiering along as soldiers of love work together. One is not present without the other. May all beings be safe, happy, and free. May all beings live with vitality, peace, and ease. May all beings live with kind, open, loving, joyous, wise, equanimous, and generous hearts. And may the merits of our practice be of benefit to all beings, everywhere, excluding none, including ourselves. Thank you for your practice today. Thank you for listening and sharing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.